Hello, and thank you for joining us for another episode of Sink or Swim. I'll be the host today. My name is Alvin Nguyen, and we have the very, very sweet and genuine Jamie Hawat here.
Oh, wow. Thank you for the introduction. Oh. Hey, guys.
Of course. So today we have a very great topic, and Jamie and I are very interested in this. This is about the application process to becoming an emergency medicine resident. Woo-hoo! Yep. And also, what exactly is emergency medicine? We're going to go through all these things, especially for anyone who's aspiring or just wants to know a little bit about emergency medicine. Yeah, so let's hear a little bit about Jamie. So, Jamie, tell us, what made you interested in emergency medicine?
Okay, so this is going to be like a broken record.
So, if you guys don't know, we're currently in interview season, so that's what she means by the broken record.
Yeah, just had an interview today, too. Mm-hmm. I also want to hear your story later.
Of course.
But I went into med school technically not thinking of one particular specialty. I was thinking maybe primary care. I'd come from a job at a family medicine clinic.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, I thought of that, but wasn't honed down on anything. And then as third year came and we had all those rotations, or core rotations, I really enjoyed every single rotation, like thinking that if that's a specialty that I want to do, maybe accept IM. I'm sorry, IM people. I love this. It was a great rotation. I just couldn't see myself as an IM doc. But surgery, I really enjoyed psych, neuro, OB. I loved peds. I got to the end of third year kind of freaking out because I was like, what is this? I can't like every single thing. That's a problem.
That's true.
It might be a good problem, but it's not a problem. So I made a little table, and I think this is very beneficial. It's like a little table that I had my top five values of, or like what do I want from a career and what do I want in a specialty. And I went to the AAMC website, and I went through different specialties, and then emergency medicine seemed to hit every single one of those boxes.
Wow.
Yeah. It was EM, it was anesthesiology as well, but EM, I think, was like 5 out of 5. Anesthesiology was like 4 out of 5.
Ooh, close runner-up. That was close. We almost lost her. Oh, yeah.
You're the first person a patient sees when they come into the doctor. You really do have to learn how to be calm in a stressful situation.
Yeah.
And then I remembered, it like brought me back to high school when I first decided I wanted to become a doctor. The type of doctor I always envisioned myself being was actually the EM type of doctor. And I had forgotten that through med school, like through the first couple of years.
Wow.
Yeah, I always wanted to do Doctors Without Borders when I first wanted. Wanted to be that person that, God forbid, we're at Target,
you know what to do.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be drop dead. They can just like faint or something.
Uh-huh.
And I want to be the person that knows what to do. That when they call, is there a doctor here? You're not hiding because you're like a dermatologist.
That's right.
no shade to dermatologists.
Shout out to the dermatologists out there.
That's me. That's my preference.
Uh-huh. Wow, that was beautiful. It's great to hear that, like, you actually tried out different specialties, see what you liked, and you actually did a very like algorithmic way of deciding this is for me, emergency medicine.
Yeah, you know how people say like listen to your gut? I have a hard time listening to my gut. It's really messy. I think I can't messy down there. I can't hear very well. I need logic to make a decision.
That's true.
But you do have to if you can listen to your gut, it will tell you where to go. When I was in the emergency rotation, I felt it felt right.
Yeah.
It felt, if it wasn't
Yeah. That's true. You just got to listen to your gut. I love what Jamie mentioned. And as we all know, like, emergency departments have a huge burnout, probably higher than any other specialty. I believe it's like in the 60s or 70%. And you can definitely increase that percentage if emergency medicine was not something you wanted to do in the first place. So just make sure you listen to your gut, what you actually want to do, because your why is really what's going to prevent you from experiencing that burnout.
Yeah, so your turn. Tell us why you're in the dream. I know your story is way different, but it's going to be cool today.
Yeah, of course. So lucky for me as well, I'm also going through interview season and had a good time to like refine this YEM. So initially I want to do nursing, right? I finished all my nursing courses and I just had to take the TEAS test. And for those of you who don't know, TEAS test is equivalent to the MCAT. So I was right there to get into nursing school. And I found an article by Leonid Rogozov. And this guy, he was a Russian surgeon who went on an expedition in Antarctica with his crew. He was the only surgeon there, the only doctor. And he started feeling signs and symptoms of appendicitis. And he was like, oh my God, I'm about to die. So he said, put up the tent, give me a mirror, give me a blade. So he was able to actually take out his own appendix. He saved his own life. And everyone else was like, what's going on? What are you doing? But only he knew that he had to do this to save his own life. And as a prior nursing student, I was like, that's a superpower. Yes. Because nurses, the greatest thing about being a nurse was just like to manage patients, to know like, what do I have to do to keep, like, is a big part of it is social. Yeah, superheroes as well. But finding out, like, this is what's wrong and this is how to treat it, that is what I thought was a superpower. So I said, I gotta learn what that guy knows. So going to medical school, I had this big dream of being a cardiothoracic surgeon. Did my surgery rotation and was like, yeah, this isn't for me. No, there's no way. I realized surgery just, it's very difficult. Like, God bless anyone who's doing that field. It's, you really have to dedicate your life for medicine. It's a lot of hours, early in the morning, late at night. And yeah, the amount of time you have with your family, and that's a big thing. Like, family is a big thing for me. I grew up with a large family, have three other brothers and sisters and a mom. And I'd want time with my kids, something I didn't really have much when I was growing up with my parents always working. So I realized like surgery wasn't for me. And I realized emergency medicine has everything I ever wanted in a specialty. It had that instant gratification. Like, someone comes in with like acute pain, they can leave the same day if you know how to properly treat it. And they'll be very, very grateful of what you've done. Another thing is you are the safety net for a wide amount of people, a great population. People come in, you can never say no to any patient. You have to be an advocate for them for all the specialties. Why do we have to admit this person? Let me tell you why. Give them explanation A through Z. I love doing that. And also, I like being the jack of all trades. Growing up, I didn't have any healthcare professionals in my family. So just knowing a little bit of everything, knowing whether something is dire or something can be solved at home, I think is a great superpower for me and my family. And I can't wait for the day I have the knowledge to be able to make that decision.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah, of course. So that's why I chose emergency medicine. Yeah, of course. It's the best field, really. Like, you're just wasting your time if you're going for anything else.
And I also think, you know how I was in a slump a little after COVID? Uh-huh. Not a lot of EM slots were filled.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I really do believe it's starting to get back.
Yeah, it's coming back.
Yeah, it's coming back. Yeah, because people are realizing it's not only, like, a great mm-hmm. superpower, like you described it.
Yeah.
But, mm-hmm. emergency medicine is burnout.
Yeah.
But there are lots of ways these days to try and tackle that and work through it. I think a lot of people mm-hmm. are putting time into learning more about burnout and even doing research on it.
Yeah.
And they're starting to see it's multifactorial. Like, there's a mm-hmm. lot of things that go into burnout. It's not just being tired.
Yeah.
Overworked. It could be a mental burnout. It could be a physical burnout. It could be a financial burnout. It could mm-hmm. be so many different types of burnout. So usually when you catch it, I remember someone telling me,
yeah.
it's not about if you're going to get burnt out in this field, it's about when you're going to get burnt out.
Ooh, so like, it's inevitable. Yeah. It's going to happen.
In the medical field, I think in general, whether doctors or nurses, it's a tough field. We're trying to help people's lives. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such a noble and difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
And I think we forget that when we're so inside, like in the bubble.
Yeah.
We get to come out and like be like, our job is pretty darn hard.
Mm-hmm.
So no wonder we're going to maybe burn out. I'm not saying everyone is going to, but it's not like, I feel like you go through phases and you might go through a phase of burnout. And then, you know,
mm-hmm. So that's true. Mm-hmm. And most people, you've heard it from the experts, it's always remembering, what is your why? Why did you end up choosing this over every other specialty? What appealed to you in the first place? So I think if you can repeat that to yourself, like, this is why I did this. I want to make a difference to the community. I want to take care of the county, whatever it may be. You may still feel like physically burnt out, but that why is what's going to empower you to show up to work every day and do your best. Oh yeah, absolutely.
So it's really nice to see, like, our generation is going to be the next generation, right? Becoming attending.
Yeah.
And stuff. So we're going to know this more and more. Our generation now is just more aware of these things and more. I don't know what the word is, but like, we advocate better.
Oh yeah.
For stuff like mental health and burnout, we've seen enough physician suicide and death and stuff like that to say, okay, that's enough. Let's start to put an end to it and find a proper solution. It's not one solution, it's gonna be a whole thing.
Yeah,
I'm proud to be in this, like, I don't know, this part of time where we're still trying to make a change. We haven't made a change yet, a full change, but we are working on it.
Absolutely. I think it's really great that Jamie mentioned that. With EM, I'm not sure about other specialties, but wellness is a huge thing. Camaraderie is a huge thing in EM. Yeah, so you always hear about the EM doctors or the residents going out on hiking trips together. They're kayaking together. They're going to the casinos. They're always having a great time together. And that family they create in the EM is very apparent across, like, every specialty sees it. They see, like, wow, the EM's always, like, they're having a great time together.
Yeah, they're so well bonded.
Yeah. And honestly, I believe that is a huge way to tackle, like, burnout, or at least prevent it from happening. I'll quote a resident that I rotated with. He says, wow, we got destroyed in the ED the other day, but the vibes were good. So it's kind of like that makes perfect sense, you know? It doesn't even matter how bad the day is, just nonstop strokes, STEMIs, whatever you call it. And, like, you just have the whole gang with you. The whole crew is there. You're just working with your friends.
Yeah. From residents to nurses to, like, MTs to everyone over there. Yeah, it's really, there's a personality type for EM.
Yeah.
And they're super chill, down to earth. Adrenaline junkies for sure. ADHD. But,
it's true, though.
Such good, I don't know, good people to hang around with. Usually.
Yeah.
And the people that have the most stories to tell.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, maybe I'm biased again, but like, the EM residents and the attendings happen to be, at least from my experience, which could be very different from everyone else's, they've been like very humble. They've been very receptive, and they come from a very non-judgmental background. And I think that also has to be taken into consideration. Just a lot of other specialties, they speak about the emergency department in a certain kind of way that you just have to build this thicker skin, build this callus of, like, okay, yeah. Because everybody thinks, like, I think that they think the ED isn't exactly doing their job as efficiently as they should. And it's just something that you have to just take with a grain of salt, because you know in the emergency department you're doing the best you can.
Yeah, it's not that they don't. It's because when you get a specialist who's been doing this one their whole life.
Yep.
Yeah, the ED doc who does it a few times every now and then is not going to do it as well as you are, but
absolutely
do it good enough to save some, to make sure that person's not dead.
Yeah,
that's literally the main job of an emergency doctor. Well, we diagnose. We're most people usually to diagnose a lot of things.
Yeah,
but we're not there to, like, manage treatment, like, you know, longitudinal treatment or anything like that. We're just there to make sure a patient's not about to die.
Yeah,
and and then even, like, we're there for a lot of things. We're first contact for a lot of patients that don't have health care, health insurance.
Yeah.
We're what's our motto? Anywhere, anyone, anytime.
Yeah, there it is.
I love that. Yeah, so we're there to take care of everybody and just making sure that they're safe and they're okay. And we can also help them trust healthcare yeah. more. Because a lot of people don't trust doctors and don't trust healthcare. So imagine how important it is to be a good EM doc to make sure that that patients feel so comfortable that they're comfortable to come back to see a doctor to continue their care. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I don't. The whole thing about that is because we're just not a specialized.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not specialized. We're going to be specialized in saving lives.
Saving lives. Yeah.
Yeah, but not a specific niche or anything, you know.
Yeah.
But I still want to like when I train, I want to be super super good at everything EM doctors need to do. So I don't have to hear that yeah. at all. Then I want to be like, oh, that's the EM doc I want, and that's what I want.
Yeah. So actually, I would like to hear you talk more about that. What is yeah. the ideal ER doctor you want to be? I know you spoke briefly about it, but can you elaborate what's like the ideal doctor?
Yeah, I think the ideal EM doc is going to be someone who's not hyper vigilant, but like when you see a case, sometimes people will come in and maybe not describe maybe like a textbook kind of way of, let's say, a dissection or something. Mm-hmm. You always need to be aware and open and always think of the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Make sure you rule that out, because for someone that's coming into the emergency department, something happened for them to have to come in. Mm-hmm. I learned this from one of my rotations, one of the attendings, which is a great question. And I ask a lot of patients this question when I see them in the EM, in the ED, is so if they're like, oh, yeah, this happened multiple times and whatever, and it's been happening for a week, I go, okay. So what happened today that you told yourself, okay, this is it.
That's good.
I need to come to the ED. Like, what happened? Patients will tell you so many things when you talk to them. Mm-hmm. You have to learn how to, like, kind of talk in the right way. So
that's true.
A good conversationalist is important for the ED doc. I know mm-hmm. we have to see a bunch of patients back to back, and some patients will take more precedence because they're mm-hmm. a more dangerous situation for sure. But never, like, you know, like, don't, what's the word I'm looking for? Don't overlook
things. Yeah, don't overlook.
Yeah, because you will, in the net department, you might be the between life and death. And
yeah.
You want to make sure you catch everything. I also think a good ED doc is someone who, you know, reads up, stays up to date with all the guidelines, with the, you know, whatever we need to stay up to date with. Be very calm, nice, you know, very patient, because we see a lot of homeless people, a lot of, like, you know, behavioral patients that we're going to see. A lot of them are, you know, frequent flyers in the ED. So it's so important as an ED doc to have patience and tolerance and understanding, even forgiveness and stuff like that, because some patients may yell at you and, like, have a thick skin.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Special person to be an ED doc, and other specialties should take it easy on us.
Yeah. Okay. Please, we're begging. I definitely want to echo that. I agree with what Jamie said. I also want to add, like, resilience is a huge part. Sure. Yeah, it's like she mentioned, you're getting yelled at by the patients. Maybe some consults aren't exactly nice. No one wants to get, you know, consulted by the ED, right? If they can, they won't just, like, say, we're not taking this guy. But so you might get some heat from other specialists, from the patients, their families. And, like, in a split second, you could be saving someone's life, and then they end up not making it. And you have to have this very difficult discussion with the family as well. This takes, like, really, really good people skills. Mm-hmm. You have that difficult, like, palliative care. You have to have, like, this end-of-life discussion when it was never discussed before. You're the first time it's ever been discussed. Or sometimes, like, a prognosis. We had a simulation where, this is back at school in NSU, we had a simulation where a patient of ours had a brain tumor, and we had to discuss, do you remember that one?
Yeah.
And I actually didn't know that actually happens in the ED.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Even, like, kids with leukemia that get diagnosed in the ED, that's
difficult.
And they come in for, like, fatigue or something. Mm-hmm. The kid's always sick.
Yeah.
CBC, and you see all those wacky numbers.
Yeah.
You definitely have to be resilient to be mm-hmm. know how to talk to people and deliver bad news.
Yeah.
And I think you also need to know how to compartmentalize for sure, because you're going to walk from one room to the other. You might have that in one room, and then you're in the other room, you're going to deliver very good news that someone's pregnant when they're really been wanting to be pregnant, let's say. And, you know, you got to switch real quick. And then also, when you're done with your job, it's so important to have a way to de-stress.
Release.
Like, what I like to do is just be out in nature, just take a walk, either on the beach or in a park or wherever, and take a few deep breaths. If you have, like, believe in any spiritual being, talk to them. Yeah, I think it's so, like, that's such an important thing. I think with every field, lots of, like, oncologists, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always good to have like an outlet. Make sure that you don't bring anything home. Don't bring all that stress, and especially like it. Don't let it affect the care that you provide to other patients. I think that's a big thing. Just don't be too hard on yourself. Look at me talking as if I'm already an attending. Yeah, don't. Back in my day. Yeah, don't be too hard on yourself. This is also as a student too, so it applies to everybody. Don't be too hard on yourself. Just know that you're doing the best that you can. Right. And maybe not everybody sees it through your lens. Maybe not everybody's walking through your shoes. But as long as you know that you're doing the best you can, that's all that really matters. Yeah.
I recommend watching a couple things.
Yeah, go for it.
If you're interested in ER, the series with George Clooney when he was young. And
that's a good one.
He's always been good looking, but you know. That's a really good show.
Mm-hmm.
It's super long. It's like 15 seasons. I gave up after season 8, I think.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But that's a great show. And another one is the documentary I sent you, Alvin, a few days ago. It's called 24/7/365. That documentary was shot with the physicians that first created like emergency medicine. Not too long ago. Like, they're the first founders of emergency medicine as a specialty. And it's super cool to hear them talk and to hear what they went through to make EM as a specialty. So I highly recommend those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
it's definitely great. I actually learned about ER, the show, from Jamie, and I'd say that it's you can see, like, I remember an episode where he had to do a post-mortem C-section, and it's like an incredibly rare. Do you remember that one?
Yeah,
incredibly rare procedure. Maybe it's like once in a lifetime, if that. And basically, the mother has a cardiac arrest and she's also pregnant at the same time, so you gotta do a C-section to take off that. A fetus, just to make sure that blood can flow back to the heart. It was insane, and he did it. And you can see, like, the OBGYN was upset. He had to deliver the news to the husband that the mother didn't make it. Sorry, if you want to watch the episode, I just spoiled it for you. And basically, just everybody was upset with him. The OBGYN was upset. The father was upset that he lost his wife, but at least the baby survived. And he had to just, like, go home after that. And you could see him breaking down. So, like, jobs like that have a really high risk, right? Like, patient life or death. But they also have a very high reward. That's the way I like to think about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tough job. Yeah. So, for any medical students that are planning to do emergency medicine, any pointers you have for them in terms of just, like, how to be more competitive for residency? What can they do as an extracurricular? How do they prepare for emergency medicine?
How to prepare for application?
Yeah, application, just be more competitive to just apply for the programs.
Okay, yeah. So my case might be a little different from yours. We can talk about that because I didn't know I wanted to go into EM until later in med school. But from the get-go, I always knew that, well, with us, step one, start becoming pass-fail.
Yep.
We're emphasizing more on research now and stuff like that. So I always try to prep my application to be strong enough for whatever field I want to get going to. And I know med students can go crazy with research and think like it's
really
important. But honestly, I mean, depending on your specialty of choice, if you want to go into something like plastic.
Oh, absolutely.
ENT, yeah, you got to take that year off and like go do your...
You need those publications.
Yeah, you need a lot of research. But other than that, I would say just do research projects that you really are interested in. First, it's going to be way easier for you to work on. Because if you chose like whatever research, research and you just have a bunch of them and you like don't care about them, it's just gonna be miserable. And,
yeah.
And once you need to talk about them in interviews, it's gonna show that you really either didn't care much about it or don't know much about it.
Mm-hmm.
And do things that you enjoy. Like my application was way stronger in community service than it was in research, and that's because I truly enjoy community service. Like I've done a bunch of clubs and leadership in the clubs and food drives.
Yeah.
Starting up the free clinic, a bunch of those things. I have my Instagram account. All those things I did because I really enjoyed them. And that's, I think, the best advice I could give you towards your application. Make sure it's well-rounded. Like, yeah, of course I'm going to do research, even though it wasn't like, oh, I love research. But I appreciate research so much. Like, I appreciate all the work it takes to do research and to get a publication. And I do believe everyone has to learn the process so they can learn how to read a good research paper versus like a not so good research paper. So it's still super important to do that, to go through that and do some presentations here and there, go to conferences, network.
Yo, that's a big one.
Network is so important.
Actually, before you jump into network, I just want to mention with the research, unlike other fields in EM, as far as I know, you can correct me, Jamie, it's not a make it or break it. I guess it really depends which program. If you're going to a very research heavy program in EM, then you should probably do some research. But just EM in general, it's not like a make it or break it. If they don't see you doing research, most of them really, it's not like they say, we're not going to take this person. It can definitely be brownie points if you do research, like, oh, wow, this person's really committed to something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely got questions on my research project. Like, tell me more about this research project. Mm-hmm. Tell me more about that. And I was able to talk about them because I knew what I did in that research.
Yeah.
I like them. Or I came up with it, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So, that and definitely keep studying well.
Yeah.
I know it's super hard first couple years of med school, even third year, but it definitely gets better and it's all worth it. Step 2 score in EM is also not the biggest, it's not a big deal breaker, but it's always better to do better. But don't put so much pressure on yourself. I
didn't
put so much pressure on myself, and I think it hurt me more than it helped me at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So, and also the more you do work in the beginning, like the more you just work on your shelves and study really well for them, the easier it's going to get for you to study for step 2 at the end of the year, because you're just helping. It's like pre-studying for something.
Yeah.
So, those are advices I can give you for applying to EM. And knowing community versus academic is different. I didn't mind either or. I thought I wanted more community. I think I want more academic. There are some programs that are a mix, which is awesome.
Yeah.
EM is so chill. That's so
nice. Yeah.
I was so nervous for my first interview. I like my heart was racing, so I could feel my heart beating. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Questions were not complicated and behavioral questions. I had none of those. It was just trying to get to know you. It's what they call the
3 a.m. talk. What is a 3 a.m. talk, Jamie?
The 3 a.m. talk is just to get to know someone, to have just a conversation, to see if you can be up with them on your night shift at 3 a.m.
Yep.
And be able to survive that with that person.
Basically, is this person tolerable at 3 a.m. or are they going to annoy me? Is this person a sociopath? Basically, every interview felt like it was like a screening. Like, is this guy a sociopath or can I have a fun filled conversation about this person? Yeah.
Yeah,
it was super relaxed, and you can feel it like with the residents and the attendings. I enjoyed all my interviews. I felt like it was just me getting to know other people. Really, it was just me having a nice conversation, and that's really one of the biggest things that EM is about. Just like, quote unquote, the vibe check to see if like, okay, can I tolerate this person for the next 3 years? Because you already look good on paper. If you have an interview, then they already like how you look on paper. Just make sure with the interview, you are like, don't fake yourself. This is a big thing people make. Like they say, what is this program looking for? How do I become this person that this program wants? Which
really,
Oh yeah, yeah.
Even on Zoom, I feel like I get
Mm-hmm. It's like, no one smiles that much. You know, like, no one's that happy. We didn't even say anything yet.
True.
It's like,
I smile too much in the Zoom meetings, and sometimes, like, my cheeks are done, and I'm like, oh, that was so annoying.
It's like,
They'll probably look at me like, why is she laughing so much? Is it frozen?
It's like, what's your name, Jamie? Ha 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 ha. I was like, oh. Oh, yeah.
Were you more aware of tailoring your application to, like, EM bound?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And how did you do it?
For sure. If you guys have any any seniors or any upper grads who are choosing EM, definitely reach out to them. That's what I did. I chose Jackie Nguyen. Shout out to her, Max Cayuto, who are, like, the upperclassmen.
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
So they knew a lot about the emergency medicine department. They knew how to, like, tailor the application. They told me about SLOWs much early on, and I had no idea what that is. So a SLOW basically stands for a standardized letter of evaluation. It's different from just a typical letter of recommendation, which is what every other specialty wants. A SLOW is very EM specific, and what's kind of different about it is it categorizes the medical students rotating in tertiles. So you're in the upper third, middle third, or the lower third. And that actually is a little bit scary because it's a little bit more competitive, right? No one wants to be lower third. And that is something that residencies look at. It's like, is this person performing, like, up and beyond? Are they asking, like, what can I do next? Are they proactive? And it shows in the slows.
Yeah, it's more objective, yeah. I think.
Mm-hmm. And the sooner you get the slows, the better it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was rushing to do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, so definitely word to the wise. Try and figure out your specialty a little earlier.
Uh-huh.
I think it's freaking tough.
Right?
To just after, like, your third year, only 1 year after doing,
like, how do you know?
Rotations in six specialties, knowing what you want to do for the rest of your life. I think that's just...
Yeah.
I don't know how I feel about that, but I'm not going to talk about it right now.
It's like, how do you know you want to do emergency, like, EM... before you have a rotation, and then to get the slows, that's pretty wild. Unless you already have, like, experience, like, as an EMT, which I was lucky enough to have, or, like, you were a scribe in the ER. But if you don't have that experience, it really is like, how do you know?
Yeah. And there's so many specialties, like, it's not just those six core ones we did.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we didn't do radiology, wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
Physiology wasn't one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Neuro, what else? Like, other types of surgeries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Will go unnoticed if you don't experience.
Yeah.
I wish there was a better way to do that, but unless you want to add another year in med school, I don't know.
Cool. Good luck to you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'd say, like, the sooner you know you want to do EM, the better. You feel like just, you know how to, like, what rotations you want to do on your fourth year. Get those slows in. Make sure you are always proactive, right? Always proactive, always say yes to everything, and be a likable person.
Just yes to everything.
If they got, like, a fecal disimpaction, you better say yes to that fecal disimpaction.
Yeah.
Just, like, show that you're proactive. Yeah, like, I've been waiting all day for this.
Oh my god, I remember my first
disimpaction?
DRE.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh. How was that?
I have lavender oil in my, like, little pocket.
Oh, wow. You're prepared.
You know, I put a few drops in my mask and double mask, so I'm smelling lavender oil, and I'll just be like, okay, tra-la-la, I can do it. As long as I don't smell anything, okay.
Ooh. Yeah, you...
Double glove.
Uh-huh.
Those gloves are not foolproof. They'll break on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she already knows. It sounds like a trauma coming back. It's like, yeah, I do it for the slow... But yeah, pretty much that whole, that's another thing too. Wherever you do your away rotation, you want to get your slow. You're basically, that whole month is an interview month.
Oh, for sure.
Because they're looking at their potential future colleague. So that's kind of how you want to think about it too. It's like, will I make a good enough impression that they want to work with me? Am I fun? Am I positive? Or am I someone who's coming to work, dragging my feet, saying, oh, here we go again. Just trying to count the minutes till I'm off my shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's nothing wrong with the program. program if you felt like it's not a good fit for you. It's just not a good fit for you. I mean, lots of programs are the same, I feel like, but maybe the location of where you want to live, like stuff like that would affect it. But yeah.
It's good that she mentioned that because just be yourself during the interviews. Don't try to be whatever the program wants, or else you're just fooling the both of you. Everyone loses in that sense.
That's so true.
Because then, like, the true you is going to come out during residency. They're going to see that. And they're like, well, why do we get this guy? Then you'll be like, why am I here? So just be who you are, and the right program will fall in love with you, and they'll take you, and you'll fall in love with the right program. Ideally.
Ideally. It's like a dating thing.
Yeah, it is. Like, please swipe right.
Yes, swipe right.
Yeah. It really is. Like, on, I believe, March 17th, I could be wrong. March 17th, you find out if you've matched. So you see that person behind the curtain. You don't know who it is. And then March 21st comes by, then the curtain opens. Like, ooh, it's this place. And hopefully it's your top three or five.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So we're both, like, in the middle of interview season. So it's not too far, but it's also getting close, you know? Yeah.
It's gonna be good. Oh, good. As long as you know, everyone on your rank list should be a place you want to go to.
Yeah.
You know, don't interview with a place you know from the get-go. I never want to go here. Like, why are you interviewing?
That's true.
Interview with them. Yeah.
Yeah.
So interview with the places you would see yourself in, and then you can rank them. And then if you get number one, that's great. And if you get number 10, that should also be, like, good enough.
Yeah. And I believe an attending told me this, like, once you get, like, in the double digits, like, whatever that might be, like, 10, 11, 12 interviews, that's pretty much, like, in the 90% chance that you'll match.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just because you get, like, 20 invites doesn't mean you have to go to each and every interview, especially if you really, really don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. You could be taking the spot from someone else who really wants to go to that program.
That is so true.
Yeah. I'm still going to those interviews, though. I just want to be safe. I'm sorry whoever spot I took.
Like, yeah. Well, actually.
Well, you're just like, how safe do you feel? How comfortable do you want to feel?
Yeah, I mean, you would go to the programs you interviewed, right?
Like, yeah.
Comes to for you, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Okay. Am I doing a little bit too many interviews? I want to feel comfortable, and I think that's a big thing, too.
Yeah, I think we're both on the same boat with that. And,
yeah. More advice for people who want to pursue emergency medicine. Not disgruntled. Don't be. I guess don't feel undermined, or don't feel like backed down when you hear other specialties like talking poorly about the ED. Take that as a grain of salt, and just take that as like, okay, I remember, like, for example, when I did my. Oh, yeah. I remember the podcast.
I'm talking about this.
Yeah.
Okay. I think every specialty.
Yeah.
Every specialty will talk about like other specialties.
That's true.
That's normal. Mm-hmm. Every specialty thinks they're the best specialty.
Yeah.
Maybe the ED docs get
a little bit more because
we consult so much. Yeah. We talk to a lot of different specialties.
You were the first consult. Or the first note that they read. So just remember that. If you hear someone complaining about a note, just remember, okay, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. Communication is key.
Yeah.
Compromise is key.
Mm-hmm.
Learning is good. Like, sometimes, yeah, they might say something and you're like, you know what? That's true. I can work on that. And sometimes you can be like, I did nothing wrong. You can just deal with it.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a lot of advice for those who are pursuing emergency medicine. And definitely make sure you get a rotation just to see if that's something you want to do.
Oh,
shadow. Yeah, shadow, if you can.
Yeah, because third year is so busy, and then you get into fourth year and you want your letters of rec.
Yeah.
Shadow a little. You don't need to shadow that many days. You can keep that right now.
Yeah.
A couple days here and there. Like, just shadow even 2 days, like on a weekend after you're done, before step two, or right when you're doing step two studying, if you can sacrifice a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
All you need is a couple shifts, and you kind of will get a feel for it.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's so important. to shadow.
Absolutely.
Well,
you still ended up as an emergency medicine, so that's great.
Yeah. When I make up my mind, I usually make up my mind.
So what can you say about, like, the typical day-to-day, what you see in the ER, and, like, what's the resident's job entail?
Yeah, so I did 3 rotations.
Wow.
Emergency
medicine. Yeah. Usually it's 2, but she wanted to go up and beyond. She did 3.
Yeah, the third one, I was like, what am I doing? I'm going to get a letter of record.
Yeah.
Extra. I mean, I really wanted to go to the program, so
mm-hmm.
I also like wanted to show face and do a rotation. So mm-hmm. It wasn't that bad. And the different rotations, like each one had different shift hours. Like I had 10 hours on one, I had 12 hours, and I had 8 hours. So they were mm-hmm. all different. It was interesting to see. So with different programs, they'll have different hours per shift.
Mm-hmm.
That also changes like from for your first year versus second versus third year. But what I noticed with the 12-hour shifts, they flew, which is
wow.
also another way. Yeah, another reason I was like, oh, this is like I like this. If 12 hours can fly by, means I'm in the right place.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think with that specific rotation, I worked kind of like a resident. I was with an attending, and I would just see patient after patient after patient.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't mind it, honestly. The more exposure and the more like people I talked to, it didn't feel like it was a lot of work. It's like it's a little more laid back than third year. I didn't have to work for a shelf. So if I mm-hmm. get home, I can just go to bed.
There you go.
You had to grasp, but it was like not as bad as studying for a shelf.
Oh yeah.
And so I could focus and like put all my energy in that shift.
Mm-hmm.
I did so much. Like I helped an attending with a chest tube.
Wow, you did a chest tube.
Yeah, I helped.
Oh, okay. It's like, wow.
Completely. But yeah, it was pretty cool. And I intubated someone. They let me in.
Mm-hmm.
So it was so rewarding.
Yeah.
And definitely hectic.
Mm-hmm.
I can see where the burnout might come. I can tell a little. Like if you do this for many shifts in a row for many years.
Oh, yeah.
Like that could get a little tiring. But that's why EM is awesome, because they only give in residency they give more shifts. It's like an average of 18 shifts per month. Some
mm-hmm.
do up to 20,
yeah.
some do down to 16, and also some just like alternate every year. It's different. Like you might start mm-hmm. 20 shifts per month, then go down to 19
yeah.
shifts per month, then go down to like 17 shifts per month in third year. So if you do the math, it's not like you're only, the 20 shifts a month is 5 days a week. And that's still not bad compared to others.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I think the more shifts you have, the lesser, the nicer they are with the hours. You
yeah.
don't work more than, 55 hours it is a week for emergency medicine
mm-hmm.
doctors, because it's 60 hours, but you have 5 hours of didactics.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not more than 55 hours a week of work.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, for the ICGME,
mm-hmm.
I think. So they're really trying to you know, to work around the schedule and everything, and I think if the more days off I have, because
yeah.
it's such long days, it's gonna be better. And a lot of programs, like with the night shift, they'll ease you into the night shift.
Mm-hmm.
You won't do as many night shifts as you do day shifts.
Mm-hmm.
They're very good about that.
Yeah, some pointers. Sorry to interrupt you right there. Some pointers with the, let's say with the shifts, some places might advertise like it's only like an 8-hour shift or a 10-hour shift, but that's when the shift ends. You don't know what time you're actually leaving the hospital. So a big question to like kind of ask yourself in the most like politest way to the residents, like not during an interview, of course, maybe during a social when everyone's just more relaxed, is what's the sign-out culture like? Like how do you have like protected time to finish your notes?
Yeah.
Like one of the hospitals I rotated at, they stopped taking patients 2 hours. Yeah, 2 hours before the 10th hour. So the last 2 hours, they're just finishing their notes, they're discharging their patients, and for the most case, they're always leaving on their 10th hour. Some places are 12 hours long, and you don't know if you're actually leaving your shift at 12 hours. You might be leaving even 13, 14 hours. So that's something to take into consideration.
Yeah, for sure.
As for the night shifts, make sure you ask if they're scattered night shifts or if they're grouped, because that can make a huge difference. Like, I would say most people want them grouped, just like you can suffer, like the first.
Get used to it.
Yeah.
And then, like, yeah, go back.
Yeah, can you imagine just like one or two days every week, you're just flip flopping between nights and days, that'd be horrible, right? That'd be like torture.
I think what I noticed, I don't know about you, but what I noticed, programs are being really good about all those things.
Like, yeah.
They're being good about letting their residents go on time, not trying as much. Mm-hmm. Like, if residents stay outside of the work hours, they won't stay more than an hour every now and then. Like, let's say you had a bunch of traumas one day, and you don't have that dedicated notes time. Yeah, you might stay a little longer because you were busy. But they really try to help, because the overlapping shifts will help. Like, if you're having a shift and someone else is starting right before you end, they'll take over a little for you, so you'll go down like in load and of like patience and just work on your notes and, you know, tidy up your list. Yeah, stuff like that. What else do I ask? I ask about food.
Oh yeah, honestly, that's a huge thing. Yeah.
Am I gonna walk like a mile to get there? Am I gonna walk a little? Is parking free? Is the food good? How much should I get food a day? Is it free?
Yeah, you'd be surprised. Some places, I would say there's one place I interviewed at. No names. Well, there's one place where it's like the parking you had to pay for, even though you're a resident, and the food was like the food stipend was like $10 a day. It's $10 a day, and for a 12-hour shift, is $10 enough to, like, feed you for those 12 hours? And they said, oh, don't worry about the parking. If you want, you can use your food stipend to cover your parking. And I'm like, that sounds like horrible like advertisement. It's like, you choose to starve or you choose to park your car. It's like,
I mean, yeah. So, they probably don't get enough funding. I don't know.
Yeah, so that's actually a very reasonable question about the food and the parking.
Just little things like that will make your day, actually.
Yeah. Like, if they say, like, you can eat at the doctor's lounge, that's a huge plus. Like, damn, unlimited food, it's good quality, that'd be great.
Yeah, with AED, when trauma comes in, you want to know how you deal with trauma. Are you head of the bed? Are you taking airways? Yeah. Are you doing the FAST exam, which is the ultrasound? Like, those questions like that. I didn't know about all those questions I wanted to ask until maybe 2 or 3
interviews. Oh, okay. Road,
I was like, right, that's an important question, because they will bring it up. Most likely they'll bring most of your questions up. And if they don't, other med students will ask. Like, usually those questions are so everybody cares about them, so you're going to hear them, and then you can just put on your side list. I recommend, big recommendation, write notes after every single interview, during your interview, like right on the side.
Yeah.
Open up a Word doc, write notes if it's in person. It's okay to take a paper and a pen or try to remember things and then jot them down.
Yeah.
Because you will forget.
Absolutely.
2 or 3 months later, if you're going to like 10 places, you're going to be like, which one is that one? So definitely write down notes. And then even I write down at the end how I felt. I like this. I like that. I felt kind of like good in this and whatever. Just write how you felt, because you'll forget that as well. And then you can, and I have a little sheet of like that list of things like food, parking, whatever you care about, so you can fill that out in every interview, so that when you're ranking, you can compare them.
That's
good food and parking, but that one has better whatever.
Absolutely, that's a huge, definitely write it down. You will forget. It's like, were they nice? They're all nice. I have like a point system. I get like a 1 through 2 points. Like, 0 is just like, I didn't like it, or just, 0, I didn't like it. 1 was like, I like, no, 0 is like, I didn't like it, or I was neutral. 1 was like, I liked it. 2 is like, I really like it. So, one of the categories I have is location. Like, UCF, shout out, that's a really good location to be in.
UCF.
Yeah. You know, like Disney World right there, you got Universals, you got the beach, like it's a great location. So that's an example. I'd give that a 2+. Next one is just let's see, how many shifts, right? How many shifts? How long are the hours? What's the sign out culture like? How many night shifts? Like some places they say 2 to 4 night shifts a month. I'm like, wow. 2 to 4 nights, that's nothing. Yeah.
That's
some places, a third of your shifts are nights. It's like, ooh, that's a lot of nights.
I thought you were a nocturnist.
I do like knights. I do like knights, but I'm sure there'll be months where I don't like knights too.
Yeah.
So it's just because you can always trade knights. People are like, oh yeah, take my knights, please.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Attendings, I know that they get paid more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Nocturne, it's good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
so.
My sleep, man. And I like it at night.
So you definitely want to know like how many knights you want to know if they group the knights together. They do you a solid, or if they're just like scattered like across the calendar, which Peds too.
Scattered, I remember longitudinal versus
mm-hmm. block. Yeah, that's a big one.
Most of them I know do both mix of like a block of Peds versus and sprinkled mm-hmm. longitudinal shifts of Peds. Because the thing with Peds is they want ED docs not to be, you know, scared, not scared. Like when you get a Peds patient, it's gonna be different. You're gonna get different like
mm-hmm. Medication is going to be horrible. Just
different vitals and yeah. everything when you see a peds patient. So you really want to make sure you're comfortable leaving your residency, comfortable seeing pediatric patients. It's good to yeah. talk about that too.
That's huge. Yeah. Find out if it's like longitudinal peds exposure or just like 1 month dedicated.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one that I have, another category is just the extra like miscellaneous. For example, some places are guaranteed 2 golden weekends. That's like unheard of. 2 golden weekends, that's crazy. But you know they're working you the rest of the month. So it's yeah. kind of give or take.
You know, I don't care about golden weekends.
Oh, you don't? Okay, that's crazy.
If I want a day off and I want to run errands, I want it to be a Monday where everybody's like working. Yeah. I can just go mm-hmm. out, run my errands. It's like not busy.
That's true.
But if you have friends in other, like, not in medicine, normal people that take
yeah.
Sunday off. Yeah.
That'd be
I
nice.
Want to hang out with them, yeah, on a Saturday or Sunday.
Birthday parties, concerts. Yeah. It's nice to have a weekend off.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I think most of them I know do at least do one
golden, yeah.
A month. Mm-hmm. Which is fair? Question. Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I don't care about that. But it
yeah.
depends on what you care about. And also
yeah.
The
vibes
so
too. Honestly, everyone is gonna put their best face on, you know.
Zoom. Yeah, I think someone told me Zoom is more beneficial for the program than it is for the mm-hmm. applicant.
Yeah.
Because the program is just gonna shine. Like you're not there. You don't see that. You don't see much. Uh-huh. But they can like do a PowerPoint presentation and like show their mm-hmm. best foot forward.
Yeah.
You're on paper. They're gonna know everything about you.
Mm-hmm.
Get to know you better, but yeah. In person is great, just so expensive and so time consuming.
Yeah.
Zoom is good for like, I mean, pros and cons for both, but.
It's tough.
Yeah, it's
tough.
Yeah.
Tough to read the vibes. It's tough to, because they're not going to badmouth their program.
No, and I don't think there's a. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
I don't. Hope not. I don't know, like, excessively bad program. Like, I doubt that exists.
Uh huh.
Mm-hmm. I'm in your style than another program.
Yeah.
Which keeps me like sane, because if I think like, oh my god, what if this like is a very like new program that I don't.
I know, that's the scariest thing. Yeah. I think maybe a good question to ask is if, let's say, if you're going through a difficult time, if you're frustrated, like who would, like which faculty member would you run to? If you sense a pause, that's suspicious. That's suspicious. Like, let me think about that. They don't feel free to like reach out to any faculty, because the attendings should be like your parents at that sense. Like, they take care of you. They understand you're going through a difficult time. And if you feel very comfortable with them, then you should say, oh, without a doubt, like this attending I'd go to. Yeah. So that's, keep that in mind. Yeah. Yeah. I was like, let me think. Who would I go to? It's like, wow. Who is safe? Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great question. I didn't think of. I also like to see like if residents are together in a mm-hmm. Zoom meeting, they're like sitting in the same room and stuff.
Yeah.
That shows a good sign. Not saying that if they don't, means they're not friends, they're close friends, like things happen. They
mm-hmm.
Each one is in their own house and they're, but it's usually cool to see them all sitting together in a Zoom meeting.
Mm-hmm.
They're close like that.
Yeah. I like to think like can I see myself being friends with this resident? And for the most case, all the ER residents are really, yeah, really nice.
Yeah, they're so nice. They're so down.
Yeah. A good question I heard that another med student ask was, does your program accept PAs and NPs, and how do they, like, how are the procedures? Do they overlap? And that's a big one, too, because everybody's afraid that their procedures are going to be taken. Yeah. So that was a great question I just barely heard.
Another elephant in the room for ED.
But yeah. Mm-hmm.
Lots of specialties have that, right? Like the trouble with...
Yeah, mid-level encroachment. Yeah. And I think that's, it's a good thing we're touching base on this, because most people shy away from ED because of the high burnout, mm-hmm, and the mid-level encroachment.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what's... do you have any thoughts on that?
I did hear someone talk about that, I think, or ask that question. And, a program is going to want to... Like, imagine you're a program. You're going to want your residents to reach their procedure log,
mm-hmm,
counts, even though I saw the procedure log counts, and some of them are, like, questionable. Like, you only need this many?
They're usually done by the first year.
Yeah. They're usually all done by the first year, but you got to do more than the, mm-hmm, than the minimum required. They will definitely help their residents, like, get feel comfortable. Like, I doubt if a resident will go to the program director or the program,
mm-hmm,
the faculty and say, hey, I don't feel comfortable in doing this. They're going to make sure they feel comfortable in doing it.
Absolutely.
If you speak out and stuff, I don't think that's a problem. And job-wise, I don't see a problem.
No, not at all.
Getting a job in emergency medicine.
Yeah.
Maybe the pay is not a specialty kind of pay, but I think it's still a good pay, especially.
Yeah, it's pretty good pay.
More suburban.
Yeah. It's pretty competitive pay as well. I would say in terms of getting a job, all of the chiefs that I've spoken to, like, no one has struggled getting a job. And it seems like the networking is really good in EM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a small world in medicine.
Yeah.
Remember that. Put your best foot forward, always.
That's right.
Make sure your both feet are good.
You never know who knows who. That's a big thing. For the mid-level encroachment, a lot of people are afraid that the NPs and PAs are going to be taking, like, the ER attendings jobs. When actually, there's a way you can divide the work. For example, the program that I really want to go to, they put the NPs and PAs in the triage fast track section.
Oh, yeah, a lot of them do that.
Yeah, a lot of them do that. They make sure that they don't overlap. So I think most specialties that say, oh, ERs, like, the emergency medicine is going to go out of, it's going to run out of jobs. That's not true. Because most programs actually do that. They put, like, the NPs and PAs in fast track triage. They don't do the inpatients. They don't do, like, the complex procedures.
Yeah, and emergency departments are super busy around the country. Like,
so
many lots of people are non-emergent.
Mm-hmm.
As well. So it's good that you have a variety. Like, some can take care of this, some can take care of that.
Yeah, and since we're talking about variety, we do have enough time to talk about the different fellowships in emergency medicine in case anyone is thinking about emergency medicine and still deciding which fellowship they want to get into.
Yeah.
So let's just talk about what's available.
So many fellowships are available. It's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's going to be the same thing for me as, like, going into med school, where I'm open-minded for fellowships, and I'm just going to go and you get electives in your different years, so you can use those electives to go and check out different specialties. Ooh, mm-hmm. Speaking of electives, I remember some programs, I don't know if you had that, Alan, they take you to Hawaii.
Oh, yeah. There's, like,
so cool.
Little mission trip to Hawaii.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so for fellowships, there are ultrasound,
mm-hmm,
big one, PEDS, global health, which I'm interested in, like, mission trips and stuff, disaster medicine,
mm-hmm, EMS.
EMS, big one too, simulation, medical education,
mm-hmm,
admin.
Sports medicine.
Sports med.
I recently found out palliative care is also a fellowship.
Yeah, critical care is,
mm-hmm,
one too. What else? There's a bunch.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Those are the big ones. Yeah, so, but that's like enough. We just named one.
Yeah.
Yeah, almost 10. So.
Are you planning to do any fellowships or anything that's, you mentioned global health, right?
Yeah, so it's just like I liked every specialty.
Yeah.
I like ultrasound, I like med, I like admin, global health,
mm-hmm,
like a bunch of things. So I think I think there's also a global health / ultrasound fellowship, because ultrasound is so beneficial.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's you use ultrasound a lot in the ED. You're going to get good at it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you use it for fast exams and everything. So that's pretty cool that they merged. They're kind of merging two fellowships into one.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try them out and then choose during residency, because things change, priorities change.
Mm-hmm.
Depends if you want to, you know, right after get a job or go into fellowship, and are you able to, like, if you found a real calling, take a couple extra years, 1 or 2 years in fellowship. Yeah. And also some EM programs are 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to mention that. Yeah.
Others are 4 years.
Have you noticed, like, in your opinion, what's really the difference between a 3-year and 4-year program, if there is a difference?
Yeah, I think,
it's hard to say from, like, a med student standpoint. Yeah.
Again, we're talking as if we know everything, but this is just based on how much experience we have thus far.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the pros and cons of both. Definitely the pros for 3 years is just being done earlier. Getting paid $300,000, maybe more, in your fourth year.
If you just want to work in the community, I don't see why you would want to do 4 years.
Yeah. To me, though, what sells me in 4 years is that shifts and hours get a little less because you're doing 4 years, right? Like, you're not cramming them in 3 years as much as 4 years. And you do have a lot to learn, like in EM, as much as it's a primary care, but you have a lot to learn, and more practice isn't going to hurt you at all. And then you can use it for more academic purposes, like research and stuff like that, and go and looking more into fellowships if you're interested in that. So it gives you more time. And I don't mind having more time. I like that. I like the slow and steady more than I like the crammed and rushed.
Yeah.
But I also can see how getting paid really well right after 3 years would help as well. So it depends, I think, on your goals. If
that's true.
Financially, or that's what your priority is, then I see why you would want to do 3 years. If not, then I see why you'd want to do 4 years. I honestly, at this point, I thought I cared. I thought I was more than 3 years. I don't care. I actually might choose more 4-year programs.
Yeah.
So
I'm not sure if this is already proven or not, but maybe like 4-year programs would give you like the academic edge to get into a fellowship than a 3-year program.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fair. Yeah, yeah.
So if you know for sure you want to do a fellowship in whatever it may be, maybe a 4-year program would be better for you.
Yeah.
Gives you more time to like explore the fellowships, the electives.
Electives, yeah.
Yeah. Makes you more competitive.
Yeah, I think there's no... you're not going to go wrong with either one. That's what I have to say. But there are other things... You can put this as one of your priorities, but there are other things you can also like look at.
Yeah.
And all be all.
That's true. At the end of the day, it's up to you, whatever you want to do, whether it's a fellowship in emergency medicine, whether it's emergency medicine in general, it's really up to you. You only got one chance. You only one choice.
Yeah. You should title this podcast like, I don't know, like something like
Why everyone needs to do emergency medicine.
Yeah, yeah.
Just cause like a drought in every other specialty.
Because we droughted enough.
That's true, yeah. 2 years ago, I think she mentioned like 500 open spots.
Oh, yeah, something crazy.
And then last year was like 100 open spots.
It's getting better.
Yeah.
So watch out.
I don't know if it's getting better. I mean, it depends like on which perspective.
Okay.
Yeah. True. But yeah, there's always a job offer. We need more ER doctors.
Yeah, we need more primary care doctors.
Mm-hmm.
More PAs. Yeah.
That's true.
I would encourage people going to PEDS as well. And then doing PEDS EM.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
If I do EM, then PEDS.
Yeah, that's also really good. EM PEDS.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
I heard something. This is like my last thought. I heard something about EM PEDS. It's that consults are a lot more easier because no one really wants to say no to a child that's sick.
Oh, fair.
So it's like if the ER doctor says like this kid is like really sick, we need to admit them, there's less pushback than with adults, which is actually really sad because there's a lot of sick adults too.
Yeah.
It's like, he'll walk it off. But that's something good about PEDS I heard.
Yeah.
So that pretty much concludes our podcast. Thank you so much, Jamie, for taking your time.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Any last shout outs to anyone listening to this podcast in regards to murders? Yeah, I mean,
I have a list. Let me open this up.
Mom. Thanks, Mom.
Thanks, Mom, Dad, brothers. Shout out to Shirag.
Hey.
Socket, Usman, what's up, my peeps? I think that's what I missed anyone.
You said Socket, right?
Yeah,
oh, okay. You just want to make sure. They're not interested in emergency medicine, so I don't even think they're going to take a listen to this podcast. But yeah, I just want to shout out to them too. Yeah.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope the listeners learned a lot from this. I think mm-hmm. we gave our, you know, as much experience as we have.
Absolutely.
That's all we can tell you guys. If you have any questions, yep. definitely reach out, please.
Mm-hmm.
You can find my email online, jh3378@
Not just your phone number and your social security, and I think they should be good. You could track them down.
I live on 2-2. But
yeah. Yeah, and you guys know me, Alvin Nguyen, AN1089@minusnew.nova.edu. And if you have any questions, you can also like find me on social media and ask anything. Yeah.
Go Sharks.
Go Sharks. Yeah. All right, guys. Take care. Thank you so much.